problems that Mark may cause for the following: wives, mothers, daughters, ex-wives, grandmothers, great-grandmothers, stepmothers, daughters, and in-laws. If you find yourself agreeing with everything Mark says, please seek professional help.
Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. Oh, boy. You know, when you make the engineers on your radio show mad, or when sometimes you play jokes on them, or sometimes you just simply misbehave, they have a way of getting back at you. And, of course, that little promo made by Jeremy and Gil is just a way to get back at me. So that's okay, because both of them have private email addresses, and I intend to gather those up and then perhaps make them available to people who have car questions 24/7. Then just use this cell phone number and call this person, and they'll help you. Nevertheless, my name is Mark Salem, and for the next 2 hours, we're going to talk about cars, and you're welcome to join us anytime you'd like. And the phone number is 602-508-0960, 508-0960. And this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Air Park Auto. They opened them up in 1985 at the Scottsdale Air Park. They're on Raintree and just east of Hayden. So Raintree runs parallel to Bell Road or Frank Lloyd Wright. And, of course, Hayden is the same as at 8000 East. So Air Park Auto is just east of Hayden on Raintree on the south side of the road. They've been on my list of best car repair shops for years and years and years, and they're a very nice, clean, and green facility. So if you live in North Scottsdale area, and actually north of probably McCormick Ranch, all the way out to Fountain Hills, and all the way west to 56th Street, that's the only shop I've got in that entire area that I can trust to send you. So again, that's called Air Park Auto, and it's owned by Nadine, and she's a lady, and she doesn't answer to any man. Her husband, Stacy, passed away a while back, and she still runs the shop, and I assure you she's going to treat you fair. So that's Air Park Auto. A friend of mine passed away last week. His name was Bob Jones, and for those of you that have done business with us over the past, you probably have been referred to his transmission shop in Tempe. Bob owned Quality Transmission for probably the last 30 or 40 years, and he was a good friend of mine. And he was a Vietnam veteran. He flew jets in Vietnam, and he still had some old VCR tapes of him in the jet and doing different things that people do in jets, and shooting things and dropping bombs and stuff like that. He wasn't a guy that told you that he was in Vietnam, and every once in a while he would start to tell you a story, and then he'd stop, and clearly it affected him in that kind of way. And, of course, those of you that know me personally know that I am a huge advocate of the Vietnam veterans because of this. They fought a war in my place, because 2 weeks before I was to be drafted, Nixon called the draft, and the Paris Peace Accords started. And although Vietnam was still around for 6 months to a year, they weren't drafting anybody else. So I have trucks that are dressed up in the American flag, and they are in respect for the Vietnam veterans. And frankly, people will ask me every once in a while, why only Vietnam veterans? And my answer is pretty simple. They didn't come home to the welcoming committee that's happened since then. But nevertheless, Bob owned Quality Transmission, and I referred lots of transmission people with problems to him, and he never embarrassed me. He never caused me any problems, and he was a great guy. Later in life, the high schools did away with auto mechanics, which took away our entire base of the growth of our auto repair future. And so Bob identified that we were going to lose all those auto repair shops that were in high school and that fed those young men to us. And he worked with Mesa Community College to come up with a program. And so out of the East Valley Institute of Technology, Bob and Mesa Community College developed an auto repair kind of class, whatever the word is, agenda or focus or whatever. So Bob would take these kids, sometimes 15 and sometimes 30, on tours of different shops: mechanical, transmission, paint and body, heavy line, diesel, all the stuff, all the different different kinds of auto repair shops. Plus, he also taught transmissions, and he was certainly one of the best there was. So he did a lot for our industry. He was quiet about it. He was married to a lady named Bonnie, and she was from Detroit. And you only had to meet Bonnie for about 10 minutes to know that she'd poke you in the nose if you did something she didn't like. And I respected her immensely for just that. And so Bonnie passed away a couple years ago, and then Bob, he didn't take that very well. And then he sold his shop to Jason Hallaby, who opened up Quality as a shop called Choice. And Jason's done a really good job. He hasn't had the time in yet to be on our best car repair shops list, because we want them to be in business for 5 years, because we all know that we make a lot of mistakes in the first 5 years of us owning and operating an auto repair shop. So I would prefer that you've made those mistakes and learned from them before I put you on our best list, because I don't want to have to deal with all the complaints that you may have generated, just like I did. Just like I did. The first 5 years for me were rough. So then right after Bob had sold his shop to Jason, then he had started his retirement, and he went full-time for Mesa Community College. And then he got sick, and he got sick and passed away within about 3 or 4 days, which was caught all of us by surprise. I was really jealous of two things. Number one, I was jealous of Bob's just firm knowledge and operation of transmissions. I just knew he knew what he was talking about. I knew that he was smart about that, and I knew that he had my customer's best interests, because I knew that sometimes he would suggest a patch because their focus was is to make it run the next 6 months. So he was able to accomplish that. The second thing I was jealous of is he had the fullest head of hair you've ever seen on even a kid 20 years old. And, of course, as he got older, it turned white. But, I mean, he had one of the nicest. He had a head of hair that all of us would have just given anything for. But he was a kind guy, and he was a good guy. So if you're in Facebook, you can go to my webpage, Mark Salem. And we have a link there that allows you to make a donation to Bob's scholarship fund that MCC has started, Mesa Community College has started. So some people are doing $5, some people are doing $10, some people are doing more. So if you would do that for me, here's my promise to you. I promise that after this shuts down in the next month or so, I'm going to match the biggest single donation on behalf of Bob and his family. So I'm doing that just because to prod you. But like I said, I'm opening the door and telling you it's sometimes $5 or $10, and whatever it is going to go to a scholarship for some person in it. And Bob's classes, ironically enough, were about 25% ladies, females, women, and 75% guys. And in our industry, a female with automotive knowledge would probably start in our industry somewhere around $30,000 a year, but in a very short period of time, certainly within the next year or two, she would likely be riding service, and with an automotive background where she could filter the technician's BS, then she would be in the $60,000 to $75,000 range. That pales into comparison to the master techs that are in the $75,000 to $125,000 range. But that brings up another situation, and that's this. There's lots of parents who don't want their kids to be in the auto repair industry because we've always been known as grease monkeys, and we've always been known as somebody who was not technically astute, didn't have public manners, and had greasy hands and dirty fingernails. And pretty much all of that was true in the 60s and the 70s when I got started, but it's not necessarily true today. But here's the benefit to becoming a technician in Mark Salem's opinion. First of all, you're the most popular guy in the neighborhood, because everybody that's got a weed eater that doesn't run, a lawnmower that doesn't run, or their car doesn't start, or needs help with the repair of their car, you are the go-to guy in the neighborhood. Number two, all the kids know you have an air compressor in your garage. So when their bike tires get flat or they want to blow up inner tubes, they come to you. Now, the reason why being friends with the kids in the neighborhood is important is because when they start soaping windows and throwing water balloons and painting and graffiti, they don't do your house. So you're a very popular person in your neighborhood, and as long as you don't work on cars in your driveway and in front of your house, then people will love you and respect you. And most of us in the auto repair industry are good plumbers, good electricians. We're good MacGyvers. We can usually fix something and MacGyver it to get you through a day or a week or a month. And most of us wear gloves when we're working, so our fingernails aren't dirty. And so with a high school education and a couple of years of advanced auto, then technicians, after they become a master tech, they make pretty good money. So and then I'm going to tell you where, if your child is interested in that, I'm going to give you some guidance, and you're welcome to take it or not. There's a couple of schools in Arizona that charge between $25,000 and $50,000 to take your youngster and run them through a program and kick them out the other side. And supposedly they're really well-rounded. Unfortunately, they have a huge debt service associated with them, so they grass is always greener, and they move around a lot because they need to pay that student loan off. There's three colleges or three community colleges in Phoenix that I would strongly suggest that you look at. Glendale is a Chevrolet, Ford, and Chrysler school. They're sponsored by those three. Now, it's true that when your child goes through the Glendale Automotive agenda or academic, the issue there is that the dealers get first pick of those kids, and they'll usually pick the top 25 right off the bat, but the bottom 75 is still employable. Number two is Gateway Community College that handles the imports. So I think you're going to get Nissan, Toyota, Mitsubishi there. Then you've got Mesa Community College that has a broader base. So they do the imports and the domestics, but they also get specific, like with transmissions, which is where Bob did. So if your child has the tilt towards becoming an auto technician or owning his own shop, then that would be a good idea to look at the community colleges. If your child moves on to owning his own shop, the shop owners, according to Dun & Bradstreet, the average shop is about $750,000 a year, and the net profit at the end of the day is somewhere between 5 and 10%. There's guys out there that are low double digit, but you can do the math yourself, but it's a good job, and you're always going to have broken cars, and so your job security is kind of like an OBGYN. There's always going to be babies, and there's always going to be cars, and there's always going to be a need for a professional to deal with those. 602-508-0960. This show is dedicated to Bob Jones from Quality Transmission, and he was my friend, and he was my hero. And when we come back, we'll take your calls. If you give us a call, 602-508-0960. I'm Mark Salem. We'll be back in a minute.
Fudge that.
Well, welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and every Saturday here on 960, we talk about cars from 10 to 12. So if you'd like to join us, like Richard did, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, Richard, I'm going to get to you in about 10 seconds. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Automatic Transmission Exchange, and they've been rebuilding transmissions in the Phoenix area at 40th Street in Washington since 1968. The common denominator in all the shops on my best car repair shops list is experience, years in business, and gray hair. You see, that's important to me because those guys have been around the block, and it's not likely you're going to have gray hair and you got into our industry 2 years ago and you own your own shop. The bottom line is that Phil and his staff at Automatic Transmission Exchange, they'll drive your car for free if you can make it happen. So you work on duplicating the problem and then drop by Phil and see Phil at Automatic Transmission Exchange, and they'll take a ride with you for free. Then once they feel it and see it, they'll do a little testing. That'll cost you, and then they can give you an estimate. So that's Automatic Transmission Exchange. Richard, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. Hey, last week I went down to get oil in a filter, and the same filter I've used for, synthetic oil, and I change oil about every 2 months. I drive a lot. All of a sudden, it says 5,000 mile filter. Then I look over here, and there's one for 10,000 miles. They got another one for I don't know how many miles. It's, you know, $6, $10, $18. Well, what is this a new ploy to these filters?
This is. Well, let me ask you a question. Let's go back to your synthetic, and I'm going to get to the filter. How many miles are you driving in a couple months, or what's your interval with synthetic?
Right at 12,000.
Bingo.
I've been doing it for 2 years. It still doesn't use oil. It performs well.
I want to tell you something. You've got to be one of the first persons that I've talked to in the last year that has the time frame right. Conventional oil is 3 to 5,000 miles. Semi-synthetic is 5 to 7,500. Synthetic is 75 to, depending on the oil, between 12 and 15,000. So I want to applaud you for not wasting synthetic oil and changing it every 3,000 miles. As far as the filter is concerned, I'm going to change your question. Mark, this is Richard, and have you ever seen a plugged-up oil filter? No. How would you know that the oil filter's plugged up? Well, we would know, and it would be really heavy when we took it off. Well,
right. The oil always pours out, so it's not plugged, right?
So, in reality, this is a marketing ploy. Everybody knows that you could run 25,000 miles on an oil filter. But this is a marketing strategy for them to make the male species feel like better than everybody else. Let's put an oil filter on there that we're going to charge you three times the amount. And keep in mind, oil filters in bulk are made from one of three factories in the United States. Everybody's is the same. They're all 20 micron. That's 20 millionths of a meter. So you take 39 inches and divide it into a million, and 20 microns is slightly less than a human hair. I'm going from memory right now, but if you convert it to thousandths of an inch, then it's slightly. The bottom line is I don't use them. I don't sell them. I know that my filters will last the 12 to 15,000 miles on a synthetic, and it's just a marketing ploy to make you feel better. So if you're doing your own oil changes and you're using a synthetic and it pours out of the oil and it's not mud and it doesn't look gray like it's got water in it and you're happy with all of that, then I would stick with the cheapest filter on the shelf.
Come back.
I'm sorry, you dropped out for a while. I didn't. You said you used certain filter and then I didn't hear you.
Oh, if you're using whatever filter you're using, you just go ahead and use. And whatever you're happy with. And for me, the cheapest filter on the shelf is usually the one I go for.
All righty. I figured it was some way to then make more money.
It really is, because right now the margins on oil and filters is pretty small. So we're starting to see air filters with the same thing. You know, it's a special air filter and it's going to give you more life. And here's the deal, Richard. Your car has a brain and it could have five brains. Here's the issue. Your car doesn't love you more if you give it synthetic oil and premium gasoline. Your car doesn't love you more if you change the oil every 1,000 miles as opposed to 3 or 5 or 7 or 12. Your car doesn't know any of that. So if you want to put the very best tires and have the very best spark plugs that have 3 or 4 or 5 different sparks on it and that cost you $25 a piece, then go ahead and do it. But there is no benefit. And a guy like me doesn't participate in any of those kinds of activities. So thank you for bringing that up. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960. Hey, Gil, how long?
Vicky is next. Vicky.
Vicky, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning. Last week, Salem Boys did a great job replacing the evaporator and heater core on my Jeep, and I keep wanting a new radio. It's 20 years old. The only thing wrong with it is the tape player doesn't work. I have no idea where to go, where to buy, who to install, and I was hoping for some advice.
I'm happy to give it to you, but I want to tell you something about your Jeep. Did you see the pictures they took of your old evaporator versus the new evaporator?
Oh, no, but I took the old evaporator with me so I can take pictures and frame them.
Okay. How about the volume of air that you have? Is the volume that's being sent out a lot different than it was?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I put it on low and I'm being froze out.
Okay. I want to tell you something that I wouldn't say to anybody else because your car's already back on the road. If you would have been there when they took your dash apart, they took your steering column off, they took the dash from door to door, they took the dash from window to floor, they had parts laid all over the floor, and they vacuum underneath your console because it was dirty, just like every other person's dirty. So as they go through, they're cleaning as well as fixing. And it's, you know, that you got the heater core labor for free, because when we got in there, we saw that the heater core was leaking. And of course, putting your old one back in or putting a new one back in is there's no additional labor. It's just the cost of the part. But when I walked by that, you had my senior guy working on your Jeep. If And I love all my guys, but there's a couple of them that I would not give them that dashboard on that Jeep. You would have just died if you would have seen the pieces. And I say to them all the time, how many screws did you have left over? And the answer better be zero. So,
Two minutes,
after ranting all that kind of stuff, I need you to ask me the question again. Oh, radio.
Okay, well.
I got your radio. There's a
Well, first we need to tell the people that in the 240,000 miles that one owner Jeep has on it, that air conditioner has always been run on max, always. So it sucked the dirty air off the floor since the day it was bought.
You're right. We knew that. And God bless you for knowing that yourself. I mean, that's exactly what happened. But I'm energized by the fact that you're down to low now. And I'm hoping you'll drop a window a little bit and run on normal a little bit. But that's okay. As far as there's a place in Tempe called Sounds Good to Me. Sounds Good to Me.
Oh.
He's been around since the 1970s when he put a stereo in my 1970 Chevrolet pickup. And when I was going to high school in 1972 in Tempe High, he was across the street. So he's moved now. He's on Broadway in Tempe. But Sounds Good to Me is the first place I'd go.
1 minute.
And then I want you to call Andy back at the shop. And there's another place. Oh, Car Tunes. Now, I don't know if car is spelled with a K or a C. But Car Tunes is another stereo shop we use. And we're very happy with both of them. And they're not only capable of fixing your deck or fixing your radio most of the time.
I don't want it fixed.
Okay. But they'll upgrade you to something that might have a USB port on it or some kind of an external audio connection. But and the price is going to be right, I promise you. So Car Tunes or Sounds Good to Me, either one of those are good.
Car Tunes and Sounds Good to Me.
Yep. Alrighty, I only got 10 seconds to go, Vicki, but I want to thank you for your patronage. I want to thank you for trusting us to do all that work on your car. Thank you very much. We'll be back right after this. Well, welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem. Every Saturday from 10 to 12, we're here. The first hour is usually the easiest hour to get through, so if you'd like to call us, 602-508-0960, 508-0960. Nick, give me just about 10 seconds. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by S&S Tire and Auto Service. They opened up in 1976, and they have three locations in the West Valley. They're in Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. They have a huge selection of tires and different brands, so you can go in and ask for a good, better, best price for your four tires, and they can give you three tires that are different qualities and three price ranges for each one of the sets of tires. So no matter whether you're interested from a tractor to a wheelbarrow and everything in between, S&S has the ability to replace your tires, balance your tires, and they also do alignments and suspension work. So if you're in the West Valley, then the name of the place is S&S Tire. Nick, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. Thanks for that good info about air and oil filters. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
I've got a 03 Jeep Wrangler Rubicon, and I've got an old air in. And a little muffler makes a little noise on going out. So I'm trying to figure out how to get a little more horsepower out of this motor without getting into the engine. Got that inline six motor, and Rubicon has like 410 gears in it. I've got 1250, 15 tires. So what do you suggest? A little more horsepower, maybe something that might be a little more economical too, because I'm getting about 15 miles to the gallon.
Okay, you're not going to get both, though. I mean, I can give you more power, but it's going to be at the expense of 1 or 2 miles to the gallon. So,
I see.
It's just you make more power with more fuel, so they go together. And let me tell you the very best advice I can give you. The answer is to your question is you're going to use a programmer or a chip to enhance the power of what you have. It will change the timing curve, it'll change fuel delivery curve, and it'll change everything based on where your foot is in the throttle. And usually they'll have somewhere between 1 and 3 and 1 and 15 different levels of settings. But this 03 is beyond my capability, so I want you to call my son, Alan, and I don't know if you have a pencil ready, but his phone number at our shop is 480-598-1234. And ask for Alan, and then tell him I've got an 03 Rubicon with 410 gears and 12.5 tires. I'll tell you what he can do for you as well. If you come by the shop, he will give you a new sticker for the door with respect to the inflation based on the parameters of that the original sticker was. He'll also give you a page that tells you what your speedometer's off, and he'll do all that for free. And what he's going to give you is a new sticker that's going to give you three different inflations. And let me explain it to you in basics. One butt in the Rubicon, two butts in the Rubicon, and six butts in your Rubicon. And you and I both know that you can't get six in there. But it's just, you know, light duty, middle duty, and heavy duty. So he'll give you all of that. And this new sticker will go right next to the sticker that you already have on there for your 225 or 235s, whatever you had, 1031s, 1030s on your Jeep Rubicon from the factory. So he'll do that for you for free.
Okay, what about the throttle body? I forgot to mention, a buddy of mine says that a throttle body will bump up my horsepower a little bit.
Well, the problem with the throttle body is that more air is not going to do anything. So he's talking about the injectors that come with the throttle body. The problem is the O2 sensor is going to trim back those injectors. So if you start throwing more fuel at it, then the O2 sensor is going to say, hey, guys, wait a minute. I see too much fuel, too many hydrocarbons coming out of the tailpipe. So the computer is going to trim down what we call the spray time. So instead of – here's what it is. If you want to go fast, the injectors are going to sound like this. At idle, it sounds like this. But in your case, when you add a bigger throttle body, more air is not going to do anything for you. More fuel is. But instead of just a tit-tit-tit, it's just going to give you, instead of 3 milliseconds, it's going to be 5 milliseconds of fuel delivery. And I would strongly suggest to you that that alone has the potential to wipe out your catalytic converter before you even know it. So a programmer is much better because it's going to match that. Yeah, so I think you're better off with a chip or a programmer, but I could be wrong, and if I'm wrong, Alan will tell you why I'm wrong, okay?
Where's the shop at?
It's on Warner and I-10, just east a mile.
Oh, okay.
If you've been to the IKEA store.
Right, thank you very much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. So, okay. There are power and performance stuffs out there, and there's all kinds of chips and all that kind of stuff, programmers and stuff. And you have to be careful because some of them will make your Jeep and your truck, your diesel truck and your gas truck be rompers and stompers. And some of them will blow up your transmission or blow up your motor. So you have to be careful. I have a programmer in my Dodge pickup truck with a diesel, and I'm on level 5 of 9. And I know that when I go to level 7 or I go to level 9, I lose a lot of fuel economy and I belch lots of black smoke and that embarrasses me. So 5 is just the perfect level for me. And I'm real happy with everything about it, although it has one glitch. And when there's a drastic temperature change between shutoff and startup, then the computer has a little bit of tough time figuring out. And so the truck might go da-da-da-da-da-da for the first 10 minutes. And then after that, it smooths right out. That's not something I had before I put a programmer in it. So sooner or later, they'll figure it out, and I'll have a software update. 602-508-0960. If you'd like to join us and have a question, 602-508-0960. And when we come back, I'm going to talk more about Vicky's Jeep Cherokee and her 250,000 miles on that thing. We'll be back right after this. Well, welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem, and we're going to be here for another hour and 20 minutes. And if you have a car question or a car problem, or if you have a dilemma, or if you're getting two different kinds of estimates from two different shops and you want to run that by me, then knock yourself out, 602-508-0960. My background is I've been in this business since 1968. I'm an ASE Master Tech and have been for the last 25 or 30 years. I don't remember. And I've been working on cars for a very long time, and I have a staff that makes me look a lot smarter than I am. So if you want to join the conversation, you can, 602-508-0960. Harry, give me just 10 seconds here. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Tom at Action Auto Repair. He's at I-17 in Deer Valley on the northwest corner. Tom's been around since 1983, and I think I met Tom for the first time in the late 70s or early 80s. I liked him then, and I like him now. He's honest, he's dependable, and when I met him in the late 79 and early 80s, him and I were looking at a big box engine analyzer. Remember when we used to hook your engine up to the big box? Well, Tom and I were part of the leading edge of that, and we both learned a lot. But nevertheless, Tom at Action Auto, he has quality workmanship, he has excellent customer service, and there's a fast turnaround time as well. And he has ASE Master Techs working on your car. I-17 in Deer Valley, northwest corner. If you're up there in the Deer Valley area, the North Phoenix area, and you don't have a shop, may I suggest you have Tom do an oil change and just see how they treat you. Harry, good morning to you. How can I help you?
How you doing this morning, Mark?
I'm good.
I was looking at the paper, and in the car section, it says a trip can save you thousands of dollars on a used car. And it shows this gentleman here, evidently he's a general manager of a GM dealership in Miami, Florida. And what he's saying is for just buy a plane ticket, you can go down there and save roughly $3,000 on a lot of lease cars and whatever that that they have compared to maybe our area or whatever. But I talk about bad timing. There's also another article, ADOT's talking about all these cars are going to probably be coming into the state and whatever from Texas and Miami from flood damage.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of your shops probably do inspection deals, you know, where you can, if you're thinking about buying a used car, you know, you can take it in there and have them look it over to see if it's one of the affected models with all the mold and, you know, dirt and stuff.
Right.
So I just, I kind of wanted you to maybe comment on that and, you know, maybe make people aware of what's going to happen with all these thousands of cars that are still sitting in the water.
They're talking about hundreds of thousands of cars.
Here's what I thought to talk about bad timing.
Yeah.
You have an article from ADOT, and then you have this guy trying to promote flying down to Miami to buy, you know, save $3,000.
Yeah. You know. Well, here's the problem. Florida doesn't have the weather that Arizona does. Florida has a humid environment, and they have salt water, salt air, and we don't have any of that. So I don't know why anybody would go to Florida to buy a used car when Arizona has the cream puffs of the entire nation, number one.
Right.
Number two, the flooded cars. See, this is what happens. Mark Salem is in Texas, and he loses his truck. The insurance company tows it to a giant yard, and they negotiate a payment with me. Now, at that particular point, it's going to go to an auction. Now, the people that are there at the auction can be paint and body shops, it can be mechanical shops, they can be used car dealers, or they could be a lot of scrap yards, which usually dominates the auction is the scrap yards. They're going to buy the car because they're going to sell the hood and the fenders and the quarter panels, and they're going to sell the brakes and the drums and the rotors and the tires and the wheels. But the inside of the car is going to be pretty well trashed, and they're going to make a lot of money. But there's also those people that are going to buy them, and they're going to dry out the electronics with some compressed air and maybe a little alcohol, and they're going to do their best to hide the fact that this thing was in water up to the top of the doors, or, you know, or worse or better. And the fact of the matter is it doesn't take a good technician more than a half an hour to find out if this is a flood car or not. There are places that they can't do anything about. So they can wash it with high-pressure stuff. They can get in there with garden hoses. They can get in there with their shop vacs and stuff like that. But there's still going to be a water line. There's still going to be dust under the dash or mud under the dash. There's going to be a lot of things that I'm not going to share with people. But it's worth, most shops are going to charge $125, and I'm saying from 100 to 150, and I'm picking 125 as a middle number. They're going to charge you $100 to $150 to do what we call a used car checkover. And that's to check all the systems and tell you which system needs attention and to give you an estimate for the repair of that system, which helps you negotiate your final offer with the seller. So that's something that you should have done before you buy the car. And obviously the first thing out of your mouth should be is make sure this isn't a flood car. So there's just lots. There's seat modules underneath the seats. And sometimes you just pop the seat and rock it backwards and then take those modules, the connections off, and you'll find mud and dirt inside there. So, I like I said, I'm not going to give you a lot of the places, but it's not hard to find a flooded car. So,
One other question, too. A lot of those cars are sold under a salvage title. Is that correct?
Well, not yes, yes, absolutely. And you need to find out if your insurance company is going to cover a salvage title. A salvage title means that the car was totaled, and because it was unable to be returned to a safe environment. So a salvage title means that somebody bought that at an auction, took it home, and in their backyard they welded everything up and they put the car back together. Well, the safety devices are not correct. The metal, the welding isn't correct, and the car no longer is, will meet any safety standard at all. So if you drive it and you lose control and you kill your family and kill another family, your insurance company's on the hook. That's a risk that they're refusing to take. So there's lots of insurance companies that will no longer insure a salvage title car because of just the inherent risk associated with those cars. So you're right about that. There's lots of salvage titles out there. And if I owned a ranch in Wyoming and there was a salvage title Dodge diesel truck and I knew it wasn't going to leave the ranch and I was going to use it to haul hay to the different pastures, I wouldn't have any problem with the salvage title. But if I was going to drive 100 miles to town and then pick up stuff and come back, I probably wouldn't risk the 200-mile trip with a salvage title vehicle not knowing who fixed it. So, Harry, you bring up a good point. Thank you very much for that. All righty.
Tom is next.
Tom, good morning to you. How can I help you this morning?
Hi, how you doing? I've got a 2010 F-150, and I've had it for a couple of years. Pretty good vehicle. And just recently, the check fuel fill inlet notice has come up. And then the only other notice that I've had is the tire pressure sensor comes up. And I checked my tire pressure, everything was fine. One was low. I filled that up, and it went away for a little while, but now it's back again. My tires are still fine. So I'm just wondering if those are serious, if I should take it in or not worry about it.
Okay. The color of the light means everything. So if the light is yellow, that means caution, just like the traffic light. It doesn't mean you have to stop or take it in immediately. Red is obviously a different story. So as far as your tire pressure...
This is just blue right above the... Yeah, this is just blue. It's just in the little window between the tach and the speedometer, you know, right above the park drive indicator.
Okay.
And it just says, I'm looking at it right now, it says check fuel fill inlet. It's in blue.
Okay. All right.
Because I don't have a gas cap, you know, it's just the cover, you know.
Okay. What you're saying is you don't have a gas cap, but you have a door, and you put the nozzle and the door
right.
opens. Okay. Well, I'm unclear as to how it would, and what it's doing is it says that I have a vapor leak. It says when I suck on the tank, I can't pull the vacuum. So, or when I pressurize the tank, I've got a leak somewhere. So it's guessing that the filler is the problem. The computer doesn't have the capability of knowing if one of the vacuum lines has come off the evaporative system. The evaporative system is supposed to suck the fumes off the tank and burn them. That's the whole purpose of the evaporator, because we don't want those fumes to get into the atmosphere. So the tank is closed, and we suck on the tank, take the fumes, run them through the motor again. That happens every day, every minute that you drive it. So the blue light's going to say, I got a problem, and I think it's going to be that neck. So you're going to have that checked. As far as the TPMS is concerned, what really has to happen here is you have to pay more attention about what's going on. If the tire, if the TPMS comes on and it says the right rear is low, then you bring it up to what the sticker says on the door. So if it's at 31, and usually there's a 7 or 8 pound spread. So if it wants 30 pounds, then it may turn on at 25 or it may turn on at 35. That's a 10 pound spread. So they're usually 5, 7, and sometimes 10. So you need to make sure that the tire that it's telling you is low is truly low. And you said, I aired it up, and it didn't come on, and now it came on again. Well, you have to go back and check that. If the tire is low again, then the TPS is working like it should, and it's telling you, I got a leak, and you need to take that somewhere and have the tire repaired. On the other hand, okay. if your guy didn't reprogram the tires, then the TPMS doesn't know where the tire's at. The last time, and let me tell you this, there's four colors. Let's pretend that there's four colors, red, white, blue, and black, okay? So when you tell the computer that red is on the left front and black is on the right rear, then the computer knows where all the colors are at. You tell it where all the colors are at. But if somebody rotates your tire and doesn't tell the computer that the black one on the right rear is now on the right front, then when the black one says low air pressure, it tells you to go to the right rear, when really it's the right front. So this happens
right
every day of my life. So I tell people when the TPMS light comes on, check all your tires, and then you'll find out after two or three activations of the light that the computer doesn't even know which tire is going down. So, and then it's pretty easy. We have this little gizmo that costs thousands of dollars, and we go around the car and tell the computer where each one is. However, in your owner's manual, it'll also tell you how to do that most of the time. So you can go in.
Oh, very cool. I'll look at that.
So keep an eye on the TPMS. That's a good thing. It's going to save your life. But I don't want you to address just one tire. I want you to trust all of them each time it comes on so that you can go to the shop and say, it's saying that the right rear is low, but it's really the right front, and you have saved yourself $40 worth of diagnostic time because you told them that. So that's a good thing, saving money.
That's fantastic.
Okay.
Well, I sure appreciate your help. I love your show.
Thank you very much for that. All righty. We were talking about Vicky with 240,000 miles on her Jeep. And this is what happened. Vicky had some air conditioning problems. She didn't know about the volume because it was over a long period of time. And the evaporator cores, let's pretend it's a 12 by 12 radiator looking thing. Well, there was a mat of trash over the front of the evaporator. So the fan is behind it, and it's trying to blow through basically a cooler pad. But at a quarter of a million miles, my wife's car would look like that. My truck would look like that. So is your car. So she said,
2 minutes.
They can't find the Freon leak, but they think it's the evaporator. That's what she brought it in for. So we dropped a camera down into the evaporator, and we could see this mat of trash over the evaporator. But in the corner, the 25% of the entire area in the right rear corner, it was wet. That says that the evaporator's leaking. Then we drop a probe down inside there, and we light it up, and we have these funky glasses, and if it turns lime green or red, then it says there's a leak. That's refrigerant. That's oil. And so we drop it down in there. Voila, it's oil. So we tell her, we have to take the evaporator, and we have to take your dash part, and we're going to take the evaporator out, and we're going to replace it. And we charged her a lot of money because it's a lot of time. And then we said, but if we get in there and the heater core is 240,000 miles old, we suggest you let us replace the heater core. We'll call you with an additional bid on that. Well, when we get it open, it's the heater core is leaking. There's signs of leak. So we call Vicky. She says yes. So we put it all back together. Now she's got volume of air she never had before. And it's not because any other reason other than the 240,000 miles on her Jeep. Now, those of you with dogs, it's even worse because usually the dog sits on the passenger seat or on the passenger side floorboard. And so, of course, we suck air from that area and we cover it with dog hair. But the newer model cars have what we call a cabin filter. So all the trash that would normally go in through your vents and blow back in your face is now filtered. So the cabin filter is like the filters at your house for your air conditioning system. They clean the air before it gets cold and sent back to you. So cabin filter in your car is something that you should have checked every once in a while. Most of the time, if it's really dirty, we pull it out, show the customer, take a picture, send it to them on their phone. They tell us to change it. Always ask for your cabin filter so that you know that they're not taking advantage of you. We'll be back.
This station is not responsible for the problems that Mark may cause for the following: wives, mothers, daughters, ex-wives, grandmothers, great-grandmothers, stepmothers, daughters, and in-laws. If you find yourself agreeing with everything Mark says, please seek professional help.
Buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, welcome back for the second hour of the show. My name's Mark Salem, and we're talking about cars, and I got a little business to take care of. But before I do, I want to tell you something. For some reason, they're playing that promo, and I think it's funny, and I hope you do, too. We're just trying to elicit a laugh and bring some joy to you. But if you're not happy about the show, or if it's something I say you don't disagree, or that you disagree with, or that you just hate my guts, then you're going to complain to the Salem Media Group, and make sure you get my name right. It's Mark Salem. Okay? So you're going to complain to the general manager of the Salem Media Group and get, just make sure you complain. If you're going to complain about me, use my name, Mark Salem. I always do that, and I often wonder if they're going to call me in and chew my butt, but nobody said anything about it, so they must think it's funny too. This portion of Unhood is brought to you by Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. They're in Mesa, and actually they're the only shop in Mesa that's on my best car repair shop list. They do light truck, they do cars, they do maintenance services, they keep track of all your maintenance that they do, they have ASC certified technicians. They follow up with friendly reminders that let you know when you may be due for service. So they say, if you're at this mileage, then you might be due for this. It's never been easier or more convenient to keep your car in tip-top shape. Thompson's Auto Repair is located on Main Street just east of Stapley. Main and Stapley just east. Thompson's Auto Repair. All righty. Dave, you're up first, buddy. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. We have a 2009 Toyota Camry. And recently we replaced the serpentine belt. And when we make a left or a right-hand turn or backing out of putting the car in reverse, we get a squeaking noise with a serpentine belt, with the replaced serpentine belt.
Okay.
I took it back to the mechanic who did it. He replaced it with a new one. And it still did the same thing. He put some belt dressing on it, and it seemed to help for a short period of time, and then it came back to the squealing again.
Okay. Was any other work done other than replace the serpentine belt? Or was he doing power steering work or water pump work or any of that kind of stuff?
No. He did say that when he took the serpentine belt off, he broke the tension bar,
tensioner?
It was, and he had to replace it. Yeah, so that was the only other work he did with the request to replace a serpentine belt.
Okay. I'm going to tell you that when he put belt dressing on it, he ruined the belt. So you can look that up on the internet yourself, and you can go to the manufacturers of belt like Continental and Goodyear and just query belt dressing, and they'll tell you the same thing. Belt dressing is a diagnostic tool on an old belt, but to put it on a belt to think you're going to make it better is a bad idea. So typically they have some kind of spirits or some kind of solvent in there, and that causes the rubber to deteriorate at twice and three times the normal rate. The reason I ask you if you had done any other work is because this kind of symptom, and I suspect you didn't have this squeaking before, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
All right. So what happens is if we did a bunch of work to the front of the car, then we didn't get a pulley aligned right or something like that. Then you tell me that there's a tensioner problem. So I don't know where he bought the tensioner, but he gave you this problem. It's his to fix.
Right.
So you just be polite but firm and say to him, you need to fix this, and spraying any more belt dressing on there is not going to be to my satisfaction. And as a matter of fact, I want you to take the belt off and put another belt on there after you clean the pulleys. I'm just not happy about that. So please do your best, because I don't know what he did. I don't know if he bought a cheap tensioner. I don't know if it's the right tensioner. I don't know if it's got the same amount of tension, because I promise you, you could buy three or four different tensioners for your Camry, and there would be one that would handle it, and there'd be four of them that wouldn't handle the load and all the air conditioning and the alternator and everything else, the water pump that it needs to run. So is this a technician you've worked before, that you've used before?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Well, your relationship should mean something to him. And so I would get a name brand tensioner. And Toyota doesn't make your tensioner, you can say, I want a Toyota tensioner. You broke it, and I want you. But you tell him, this is a problem you gave me, so I need you to work on it. And about the belt dressing. Now, it's not good enough that you clean the belt dressing off with brake clean or something like that. This has permeated the belt already. So you ask him if he would clean the pulleys and then put a new belt back on, and then maybe the tensioner is the problem, because that's the only thing that really made a difference. Now, the other possibility is the belt is too short or too long. So the tensioner is at its extent, and it's not tensioning. So if I were the guy, I'd be looking at the tensioner. I would unload and load it, and I would make doggone sure that if there's 2 inches of throw, I want the tensioner to contact the belt at about a half an inch, and I want it to be firm at 3/4 of an inch. I don't want 2 inches of throw and have the tension on the belt be fine at 1 7/8. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
There's one other. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I wanted to say that we also noticed that the motor mounts are worn, and wondering if that would have any effect on a serpentine belt.
No, and I want to tell you something. With all due respect to whoever, I go crazy when I find out that someone is told they're worn or something's cracked or something. Those are words that people use because they don't want to say that they want to sell you motor mounts, so they use the word worn. I want to arm you with this question. You look them straight in the eye and you say, what symptom do I have right now that you're going to fix with $1,000 worth of motor mounts? And I want to tell you, when they start using the word cracked or worn, those are some of the words that just drive me crazy. If you want to see me go crazy, one of my staffers uses those kinds of words, cracked or worn. I hate those words. They're good or they're bad.
Yeah.
When you look at the light bulb, it works or it doesn't. In your case, I'm going to tell you what the right answer would be. Come over here to your car. Now, get inside, Dave. I want you to close your eyes, and I'm going to sit in the passenger side seat, and I want you just to close your eyes, put your hands on the steering wheel, start the car up, and I want to say A, feel that, just kind of get that in your head, and then I'm going to go to B, A, and B. Now, did you feel anything different? You go, oh, yes, there was a vibration in B. Okay, well, I was shifting it from reverse to neutral and reverse to neutral and from neutral to drive, and you'll see that the vibration is caused by the motor mounts. So I'm going to fix that for you right there. And that's all you want.
Okay.
Is a little dog and pony show. That's what you want. Okay?
All right. Well, there is one other thing. I went to the Internet,
okay,
and they said that with the Toyota Camry and similar, that if you turn the key to the on position but not turn the motor over, and if you wait 3 or 4 seconds and then do it, that you won't get the squeaking. And miraculously, it did work.
Okay.
And I was wondering if you had ever seen that on YouTube or...
No, I want to tell you, I don't fix cars with YouTube because I've got a bunch of people out there that have no credentials, have never got their fingers dirty or hands, and I don't trust them. And let me ask you this. What do you think is happening when you turn the key on to eliminate a belt squeal? Because nothing is happening. When you turn the key on, you're going to fire up the fuel pump and the distributor. That's the only thing you're firing up.
Yeah.
So how is it that...
Yeah, his comment was that it was turning the computer on and that the computer was just slow to do whatever it does and was causing, and this was supposedly someone who is an engineer for Toyota.
Okay, well,
a retired engineer for Toyota.
Okay.
That was his claim anyway.
And I would say
I'm just curious.
Okay, I know you're, I'm not going to attack you, I'm attacking him. First of all, he's probably engineer,
right,
and he's a locomotive engineer, okay? He probably doesn't know crap about Shinola. Let me tell you something. As far as an electrical consumption on the computer, I want to give it to you in this fashion. Your starter takes between, 150 and 300 amps to fire your starter, okay, to turn over the engine. I think your computer takes less than an amp to run. That is less than the dome lights. That's less than the horn. That's less than the glove box light. So for someone to say that the computer needs to wake up, stretch its arms, and then that'll be okay is just BS. That's all it is to it. That there's no science to that. So you've got some 6-year-old kid or 16-year-old kid that's wearing the moniker that I'm a Toyota engineer, and no one is challenging him and saying, hey, why don't you post your credentials on the website with your YouTube thing? I'm not mad at you. I'm not mad at you, but you.
No, I understand.
You've tickled the elephant. Thank you, Dave. Thank you very much.
2 minutes.
All right, you're welcome. Thanks for your time.
You betcha. Larry, you're up next, and stop tickling me, Larry.
Thank you, Mark. I've listened to your program for years and appreciate all of your information.
Thank you very much.
I keep my cars for a long time. I've got a 92 Lexus LS with 163,000 miles, a 98 Subaru Legacy Outback with close to 200,000 miles. And I'm wondering what you recommend in terms of changing the timing belts. Do you go by miles or years?
Wow.
And does it matter if it's, you know, the miles are down here in the desert or are they up in the mountains?
So you've not done the timing belt on either one of these?
No, I have. I think they were both done right around 90,000.
Okay. All right.
So I have 90,000 on the Lexus, and I've got 56,000 miles on the new timing belt on the Outback.
Okay, I have an answer for you. My personal comfort zone
1 minute
is between 90 and 110 on virtually every car with a rubber timing belt as opposed to a metal timing chain. I also think if you pattern everything right, that when you do the timing belt, you do all the fan belts and the water pump and the tensioners, and basically you're getting three jobs for the price of one labor job. I got to take the water pump off and put it back on. So why don't I just take the old one off and put a new one back on, because I'm not going to charge you any more labor. I'm going to actually just charge you for the water pump. And I take the fan belts off, so why don't I put new fan belts on? So, the answer to your question is, with respect to time, is 8 to 10 years. I don't care how many miles you got on it, 8 to 10 years, you're not taking my grandkids to Disneyland in that car. And I do love all my grandkids, as you can tell. But as far as time is concerned, 90 to 110 is my comfort zone. And I think that's a good broad spectrum of all the cars out there within the last 15 years. Okay?
Okay. Okay, and then what about oil changes for older cars? I know earlier in the program you said if you're using regular oil, 3,000 to 5,000 miles.
Yep. Here's what I say.
Let me
tell you this. Find out where the cars are a quart low and change it just before that. And the beginning of the end of both of these motors is a profuse oil leak, which says that there's tremendous internal pressure, or it starts consuming oil a lot. That's the beginning of the end. And until that happens, until it starts leaking a lot or consuming a lot, those cars might as well be as good as new. So with respect to oil changes, if you're going to use a conventional, I would be using a 1030. And I'd be changing the oil of every 5,000 miles, so long as I could get by with 5,000 and not drop below the ad mark. If at 5 I'm below the ad mark, then I'd move to 4. So I go from 4,000-mile oil change intervals with a 1030, a conventional 1030. Not a semi-synthetic, not a synthetic. That's a waste of your money. Just a conventional. Now, there's some of us that don't do conventional anymore, and I'm one of them. But my oil changes are down in the conventional range, but you're going to get semi-synthetic. So that's just a business decision I've made because I think my customers are worth it. I got to go, Larry. Bob, you stay right there because you're my first caller. We'll be back right after this. Well, welcome back, everybody. We're about 40 minutes away from the end of the show, but the lines are wide open except for Bob. So if you have a car question, if you want to comment on something I say, or you want to argue with me, or if you want to compliment one of my shops, then all of those things are wide open. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Real quick, I need to talk to Dave. Dave was the one that had the 09 Camry. He had a belt replaced, and now he has a squeal that the shop gave him. In a synopsis, and you know, sometimes I get emotional. In a synopsis, Dave, the belt is too long, or the tensioner is cheap, or the tensioner, the stroke on the tensioner isn't in the middle with the belt. So either the tensioner's bad or the belt's too long. It's going to be one of those two things. So he'll have to figure that out because he replaced both of them. Bob, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Hi, Mark. On a 2014 GM 5.3 with the active fuel management, would you ever recommend deleting the active fuel management as a preventative measure because of potential excessive oil consumption or cam damage due to a faulty lifter?
Okay. The 5.3 cam and lifter problem has nothing to do with cylinder select. It just has nothing to do with cylinder select. It's a problem with the camshaft and the metal and the composition of the metal, because the camshaft starts to deteriorate. It wipes out the rocker. And then, of course, we end up with a valve that doesn't open all the way, and we have an engine miss nobody can fix. I want to tell you, the only time I recommend that they take out cylinder activity or, you know, cylinder select or whatever you want to call, is if you add an aftermarket exhaust system. Then when you go into active management, where we drop cylinders, so you start with a V8 and it drops to a 6-cylinder or 4-cylinder, so it controls your fuel consumption based on dropping cylinders. The only time that I would say that you would disable that is if you put some high-performance exhaust, because the drone from the exhaust is going to drive you crazy when they start dropping cylinders. So it's beautiful with a 6-cylinder or an 8-cylinder motor, but when we start dropping cylinders, the drone, everybody hates it. And I know that to be true, and I'll tell you why. We have a high-performance Camaro with a blower on it, and we put high-performance exhaust on it, and at the same time, we ask our computer guy to program out cylinder select. Well, before he could get to it, I drove it to Las Vegas and back, and I hated the sound when they start killing cylinders, because you could hear it just distinct as all get out. So I had him disable it, and then later, we put the stock exhaust back on it, and then I put it back on. But it made about 3 miles to the gallon average difference for us. But in your particular case, I would think there'd be no reason to do it. And if I owned your car, I would not program it out. I would just leave it the way it is. So I think the 5.3, and so there's some other motors on the General Motors side that's having this same camshaft and lifter. It's almost always all the V8s with roller lifters. And that's where we're seeing the deterioration. And frankly, we do a lot of those, so I'm well aware of what you're talking about. But I've never seen, nor have I ever blamed, that lifter and camshaft wear on cylinder select. Good luck, Bob. Thank you very much.
Emily is your next caller.
Emily, good morning to you. How can I help you?
I hope you can help me. I have a 06 GMC, and when I was in the garage and it started to back out, it just froze. It just froze up and nothing would move. And you couldn't move forward or backward. And I tried to step on the brake, you know, the foot brake. And it wouldn't, you couldn't push the foot brake down. I was just trying to figure out what was wrong. You know, it wouldn't go forward, wouldn't go backwards, wouldn't do anything. And so I just couldn't go anywhere. So I went in the house. Well, that happened again when I was parked in front of the optometrist. And I think it moved by itself. I had parked it right close to the curb. There was a curb in front of the optometrist's office. And when I came out, my glasses were new, and they have strange crystals. And so I started to step over the curb there to get to the car. And I noticed it was about a foot and a half back from that, and I didn't park it there. I put it right up close, you know. And I hesitated. I thought it was my vision. It wasn't, and I corrected my stride so I didn't fall down the cement.
Okay.
And I went and started, and the same thing happened there, and I had it towed.
Okay, I need to ask you some questions. I need to ask you some questions.
Yes.
Okay, because I'm not getting what you're telling me. Let's start at the beginning.
Okay.
When whatever happens, happens, you're in your garage, you get in and you put your key in, and you hit the key. And does the motor run, but you can't get it into reverse? Is that what you're saying? The motor's running, but the shifter won't give you reverse? Is that it?
No, I started to back up, and then it just froze.
It just what? Say that again.
Just froze up as I was, you know, it left a little bit backwards, and then it just froze up.
Okay.
Everything froze up. It wouldn't move. Forward, it wouldn't move backwards.
Okay.
And
okay, so you're in the car, and you start it up, and you put it in reverse, and it will move backwards some short period, and then from that point, you can't drive it at all. If you give it gas, it doesn't move. Is that what you're telling me?
I think so. It's done it about three times, and I worry that it'll do it when I'm in
okay.
heavy traffic. Just stop.
All right, you're going to have to take it to a garage, and you're going to have to show them what you're talking about. What I don't understand is if we get reverse, reverse should be there all the time. And when you get drive, it should be there all the time. The only thing I can think of is that you have a fuel or a fluid level problem in the transmission, that the fluid may be at a critical low level, so it's going into neutral. So I'm thinking that would be the first thing I would check, is check the transmission fluid on your car. The next thing I would do is I would want you to demonstrate that happening for me. So you need to figure out when it happens or how it happens. And maybe you park your car at the shop, and maybe you have some of your friends pick you up and take you someplace and come back, and then you know, okay, it'll do at this point. So I just don't know. Your symptoms don't sound familiar to me, but I think if you can park it at your shop and then go to lunch with one of your girlfriends and come back, and if you can make it happen then, I'm quite sure any technician can figure that out real quick. Thank you very much.
I took it to GMC.
Okay, but
I took it to GMC.
I understand that, but you couldn't demonstrate it. Yeah, you couldn't demonstrate it to the guys at GMC, so they're working off of your description. And your description is, it's not as technical as we would expect from a man. So I'm not beating you up because you're a lady, but it's just got too many moving parts. So what needs to happen is you need to be able to demonstrate it in some fashion as best you can. We'll be back. Hi, I'm Mark Salem, and we're talking about car and car repair questions and car repair problems, 602-508-0960. IMM Auto Services in Tempe. IMM Auto Services just south of the 202, just west of the 101, otherwise in northeast Tempe. They do work on all kinds of cars, so no matter what you've got in your garage, Dave at IMM Auto Service can take care of it. He's been in business since 1972. But if you've got a Chevy, a Ford, a Chrysler, a Toyota, or a Honda, bingo, he's got you covered. However, if you've got a Saab, a Volvo, a Fiat, or an Alfa Romeo, he's got those covered too. I actually send those cars with sophisticated diagnostics necessary. I send cars to IMM Auto Service, especially if it's a Volvo, a Saab, a Fiat, or an Alfa Romeo, and it's a problem I've never seen before. So I am not shy about raising my hand and saying, I'm not the best shop for you. But when you've got a Volvo, a Saab, a Fiat, or Alfa Romeo, then IMM is the best shop for you. Let's go to the phones. And Leonard, you're up next. How can I help you?
Okay, I've got a 2001 Nissan four-door pickup. I cannot get the dash lights to come on unless I turn the headlights on first.
Okay. I think that, was it always that way?
No, it's just been that way the last two or three weeks.
Okay, so It during the day, I'm confused. Why would you need the dash lights on during the day?
Well, I don't need them during the day, but I do in the evening.
Okay. Now, there's two things that would prevent your dash lights from working. Number one, there is a fuse for the dash lights, so it could be bad.
Okay.
Another thing, too, is that in some cars, in many cars, the fuse for the dash light and the taillight fuse is the same. So what happens is if you lose your taillights, then we also make you lose your dash lights. And so that's the automaker's way of saying you need to get this fixed, because you don't know your taillights aren't working. But if we tie that circuit to your dash light, then you'll get it fixed. I want to tell you that
I better check my taillights.
You better check to see if they're working, and if they're not working, then you're going to be able to fix the taillights and the dash lights by just having somebody replace a fuse or fixing the problem that the fuse blew. That's what happens, okay?
Sounds good.
Okay. Thank you very much, Leonard. All righty. Thank you very much for your kind comments. Steve, you're up next.
Hey, Mark. How you doing?
I'm good.
I have a 2014 Dodge Ram pickup. It's only got about 6,000 miles on it.
Okay.
when I let it sit for several days in my garage and start the truck up, I hear a knocking sound in the motor. Sounds similar to like a cam or something. It's pretty loud, and it goes away after about 15 seconds, but just sounds like, I don't know.
Okay.
It's pretty loud. And,
Who did the last oil change on it?
It's always been to the dealership where I bought the truck.
Okay. It's still under warranty, isn't it, or not?
No, it's a 2014, and I think it's, what, 3 years or 30,000 miles?
Okay. But you said you only have six on it?
I took it. Well, I had six. Now I got 15, but I took it in at six, and I brought it to their attention, and they checked everything and said, well, everything's the specs. And I said, well, yeah, but when I start this thing up, something's not getting oil for a few, 10 or 15 seconds, and it sounds pretty bad.
Like, okay.
Something's not getting oil.
Well, first of all, we have to know that there's a problem, and so this is what I suggest you do. I suggest that next time you have the oil changed, write down that time, and at 1,000 miles, pull an oil sample, and that's easy. Just go take it to your garage and just say, hey, I want you to take this little jar and put some oil in it from my car. And we'll either suck it out of the dipstick tube or we'll take your drain plug off and put it up. Now, you get on the Internet, and you're going to go for engine oil analysis, and you're going to find all kinds of places you can send your oil in. I want an oil sample after 1,000, and I want an oil sample after 2,000. I want two oil samples, and you send both of them. Now, they'll send you the vial and all the stickers and the way to send it back. So you're going to mark one at 1,000, one at 2,000. What we're looking for is a comparison in growth of metal. So if the aluminum number is on the first one is 7, and on the second one it's 37, then we've got aluminum coming apart in that motor. On the other hand, if all the numbers are on the left column at 1,000 are the same as the right column at 2,000, then nothing's happening. There is nothing coming apart. There is no problem. And it's probably more related to you letting it sit and all the oil draining back down to the pan and then you starting it up and it takes it a minute to prime. Another thing you can do is have your auto repair shop put in an external oil pressure gauge. And if you do that, then you can rent it from them for probably $50 for 5 days. So they'll install it, then you drive it and just see what they open, and you let it sit for a couple of days or however many days you normally do it, and then you start it. I'll bet you what you're going to see is you're going to start it up and the oil pressure is going to respond instantly. It's going to go from 0 to 50 or 60 pounds. And then by the time you count 1, 2, 3, 4, between 3 and 4, you're going to have a quieted motor. So we're just draining the oil, and it has a lot to do with you sitting there. So two-pronged attack. Number one, what's the oil pressure? And is it coming alive when it should, as soon as the engine starts? And number two, do we have any abnormal wear in the engine? Each one of those oil analysis, the first one and the second one, will be between $10 and $20 a piece. And like I said, you get on the Internet, you find somebody, they'll send you the vials, they'll send you the direction, they'll send you the box to send the oil lab, then they'll send you a report and they'll explain it to you. That's the easiest way to do it, and that is irrefutable evidence. If that motor's coming apart, that will get their attention, and with the low mileage you've got, in spite of the fact it's 3 years old, they should help you. I would imagine they would help you. So that's my offer to you, Steve. Good luck to you. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. If you'd like to join us, you can. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem. Saturdays we're here from 10 to noon talking about cars. I have a list called the Best Car Repair Shops. It's on my website, marksalem.com, marksalem.com. This list has existed since 1988, and it was the very first referral list in all of Arizona. Angie's List and everything after that I was first. I'm pretty proud that I was first. It was because of this. Everybody wanted to come to my shop, and actually I knew lots of guys and women that owned shops all over the valley. So I created this Best Car Repair Shops list so that people wouldn't drive from Sun City to South Tempe. They would go to Sun City to a shop that I recommended. So it was a good thing for them and a good thing for me. And my mother thought it was a lot better that I tell people to go to a shop that I knew and had trust in than try to get them to drive 40 miles to mine. And I agree. So the people I talk about on the radio are on my best car repair shops list, and here's why that's important. If you have a, and on my website it says this, if you have a problem with one of my shops, and you file a nice keyword here, nice complaint at the Better Business Bureau, and the Better Business Bureau tells the shop to give you money back or to fix your car, and the shop refuses, two things happen. Number one, I kick the shop off immediately. Number two, I'll fix your car or I'll refund you money up to $5,000. Nobody else does that. And I've never given anybody $5,000 because if the Better Business Bureau tells the shop to do something, the shop does it. So it's a pretty cool deal. Larry Harker's Auto Repairs at 38th Avenue and Indian School. This company's been open since 1967. They do auto electrical work, brake service, auto emissions, vehicle maintenance. But what Bob does the best is he's a great diagnostician. So if you've got a noise or a problem, then Bob's the kind of guy that you can wave that red flag in front of the proverbial bull and you can get him to diagnose your car. Now, he's not going to do it for free, but he has the uncanny ability to discuss the problem with you and to find and fix, well, find and estimate the problem. So if you're anywhere near 38th Avenue and Indian School, then you should be doing business with Larry Harker's Auto. But no matter where you're at in the valley, if the story starts, I've had this to three different places and nobody can fix this, then that's when you deserve to go to Larry Harker's Auto Repair. If you're on Facebook, you can go to our site, Mark Salem, and we talk about cars. We talk about car problems. We don't talk about politics. I don't send you funny movies. I'm not interested in this. This is all about cars. Now, my email address is pretty simple. It's mark@marksalem.com. Mark with a K at marksalem, S-A-L-E-M, like the cigarette, .com. If you leave your phone number on your email, I like to call you back because oftentimes I have questions. It's a two-part dialogue. I ask you questions. You give me answers. So I will call you, but I'm going to call you from a blocked phone number for obvious reasons. So if you want to do that, mark@marksalem.com. 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, that's a good phone number right now, 602-508-0960. If you're, let me tell you about Facebook. Those of you that already are on Facebook, you know, but I get ladies that want to friend me on Facebook, and I go to their page, and they just open the page, and they have some sensuous photographs on there, and they don't have any friends, and those are the kind of people that I'm not going to accept. I will just dismiss that, because clearly they have an idea about our relationship that's different than mine. And I know many of you men on Facebook run into the same thing. I don't know if you women do or not, but I'll look at your Facebook, and if you're from Arizona and you've had your Facebook account 2 or 3 years and you have 30 friends, 100 friends, 200 friends, that's good for me. That means that you like me and you want to be a part of the car show on Facebook. So you're more than welcome to do that. I want to talk to you about phone estimates. There's no way we can give you a phone estimate no matter what you tell us. There's just no way. A guy calls and he says, I want an estimate for 4 shock absorbers for this car. He can't answer the following questions. On the front shock absorbers, are the upper mounts good or not? What is your symptoms? I don't have any. Well, why are we replacing the shocks? Because this other shop bid 4 shocks for me. Did they come up with the idea that you needed 4 shocks? Yes. Okay, so we don't know if you need upper mounts. They're almost $100 a piece. Are we going to have to align this after we change the front shocks? It's like 50-50, but we need to see your car. I don't know. Well, that adds $75 to $100 to your bill. Let me ask you a question. What's the production date of your car? Is it the first 6 months of the year or the last 6 months of the year? Now, I need to know the 8th digit and the 10th digit of your VIN to order parts specific for your car. You see, folks, you can't give us that information over the phone. It is not in your best interest. Now, the shop is going to do one of two things. The shop's going to bid it high, not knowing what all you're going to need. and you're going to pick the guy that's cheapest, and the guy that's cheapest gave you a bare bones estimate with the cheapest shocks he could find. He's got the labor in there, but he has no upper mount, which most cars need. He has no alignment, and by the time he's done, he's going to be up along the big dogs with the big pricing. So some shops will overbid it, not knowing what you want, because you don't know what you want, and the car's not in front of us. And shops, a lot of shops will underbid it to get you in to get your car apart so that they can then add all the other stuff that the other guy's got. So every day of my life, someone asks me for an estimate. And I tell them the same thing. It's kind of like this. You're a painter. You're a house painter. And I call you and I say, how much will it cost to paint my house? There's no way you can give me an estimate. You don't know if the paint that's on there is peeled and fallen off. You don't know if I want to change colors. You don't know if my house is 1,200 square feet or 12,000 square feet. You don't know if my house is one level or two. You don't know how much work there's going to be on the trim. You don't know if you want me to do window sills or, and the door or not. You see, there's so much, it's just difficult to give you an estimate. My suggestion is this. When you want an estimate, not on Monday morning or on Friday nights for obvious reason, drop by a shop. Walk in and say, I've been told I need shock absorbers. Is it possible in the next 20 minutes for you to give me an estimate? So most shops, good shops, are going to go out there and look at your shocks and ask permission to put it up on a rack. If the shocks are leaking oil, yes, they need to be replaced. If the tires are cupped and the cupping is directly related to a bad shock, yes, they need to be replaced. But if they aren't leaking oil and we don't have any abnormal tire wear, then the question is why do you need shocks? Then if it's up in the air, then we can get the sixth, the eighth digit and the tenth digit. We can check the upper mounts. We can check to see if the struts are going to cause the need for an alignment. We can do all that. Then we walk back to the parts department and we have three different kinds of shocks. We have cheap, middle, and expensive. So then we're going to give you an estimate because the shock is a shock. So the three prices of the shocks will be the same, or they'll be different, but the labor's the same. So we'll give you a good, better, best estimate. And at the end, we're going to add 10% to the estimate because 8% is sales tax and 2% is shop supplies and environmental charges. In my shop, we're going to add another 3% because we always want to come in under our bid. So that's how it works. So the idea that you're going to be able to call a shop or send us an email or send us an email through Google or through Facebook or through Yelp or whatever, it's just not in your best interest because there's only two positions the shop's going to take. Shoot it cheap and get you in there and then rip your head off, or give you a very expensive bid knowing they're going to come in under the expensive bid, but they don't know what it is that they have to do. So it's not uncommon for my shop to do the same thing. If you're adamant and you want an estimate, we'll guess on the shocks, we'll guess on the labor, and we're pretty good about that. And we may add 25% to the bill just not knowing. We don't know if we need tie rod ends. We don't know if we need an alignment. We don't know if something's broken. We don't know if the springs are bad, because on the front we have springs and shocks, and sometimes the springs are bad, but the shocks aren't. So we'll bid shocks and springs, not knowing what you need. So I'm just trying to help you out, but stopping by a shop and asking them for an estimate is far better use of your time than sitting at your phone and calling a bunch of shops and asking them to bid. Now, be prepared for that question. The question is what are you trying to fix with a set of shocks? Because right off the bat, let me tell you this. A full set of shocks on a car could cost you $800, $900. And let me tell you this. If they're not leaking oil and there's no abnormal tire wear, you're wasting your time. Number two, I'll call people afterwards and I'll say to them, you've had your new shocks for 30 days. Was it worth it? We charged you $850. Was it worth it? 90 out of 100, 9 out of 10, 90% of them will say no. Yeah, the ride's a little bit better, but you know what? For the change in ride, it really wasn't worth $850. And then I sometimes get to say, I told you so. I told you they're not leaking and they're not causing any abnormal wear of water or abnormal tire wear. And if they're not beating you to death and there's no clunking when you go over bumps, then they're kind of working. So that's an important consideration with respect to how we estimate. And I think what I do is what many good shops do, because a lot of what I do, I've copied from other good shops. So they have a program. I kind of like their program. So my email address, again, is mark@marksalem.com. And on phone estimates, I just want to tell you, you're wasting your time. It's just too difficult to be able to do it. And then I have a coolant leak. What would it cost to fix it? The only thing I can answer is it's going to cost us $25 to $30 to find the coolant leak. Then once we find the coolant leak, then we can give you an estimate for the repair. But basically, in order for us to be fair to you, we have to have the car. And most of us do free estimates. So if all we have to do is lift the car up in the air and look on the underside, that's going to not cost you anything at probably more than 75% of the shops out there. Again, not Monday morning or Friday afternoon for obvious reasons. So when we talk about Kurt's Auto Repair, we talk about one of the best car repair shops in all of Phoenix. He's on I-17 in Bell. He's in the northeast corner. He's been around for a very long time, since 1987. Kurt and Eric are really good people. Eric is the service writer, and Kurt's the owner, and of course his wife is there as well. But let me tell you, they go back in time.
2 minutes.
Because when you do business at Kurt's the first time, within the next couple of weeks, his wife is going to knock on your door and hand you a basket of baked goods. These are not baked goods she bought at Smitty's. She made them herself. And she's going to say, thank you for trusting us. And that's what we did in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s. But Kurt still does that. So he's got an honest team of technicians. He has a master tech running the shop, and he has a master tech running the techs. So Jeff and Eric runs the shop, and Jeff runs the service writing side, and they're both master techs, so you get the best of the best. Very few of us have master techs in those levels. We do, and Kurtz does, but I know few others that do. So let me tell you what it means to be a master tech. A master tech, there's 8 tests for a car or a light truck. If you pass the suspension, then you're a master tech in suspension. Pass the AC, then you're a master tech in AC. No, you're an ASC certified tech in AC. You're ASC certified in suspension. But a master tech has passed all 8 tests, and you have to recertify every 5 years. So a master tech is kind of what you're looking for. He's been around the block, he's probably got some gray hair, and he's well experienced, and he's taken the time, sometimes 3 hours or 4 hours, to take all 8 tests, to test his ability against everybody else in the industry. So, a master tech means something. I'm proud to tell you I'm a master tech, and I have been for 25 or 30 years, and I've recertified 5 times. So, thank you for spending your time with me. See you next Saturday right here from 10 to noon on KKNT. And until then, make sure you ask them, what symptom are you going to repair with your suggested repair? That's an important consideration.